We know that like non-binary isn't this new concept that comes out that you just only hear about like on Instagram or something like that, right? So I don't think it's like a new phenomenon whatsoever.
That was our guest, Julia, from our panel, discussing their introduction to non-binary gender as a long-standing and historical concept.
Hello, welcome back to Non-Binary Gender, Scholarship and Experience. I'm Phoenix.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're talking about history.
Specifically, we're going to be taking a look at historical genders and instances of gender performance throughout history that don't fit in with our modern understanding of binary man-woman genders.
I view it as an inevitability. When gender has been assigned, or rather aspects of personality, appearance, etc., have been assigned to an identity, gender, there will be those who do not fit in the box.
One aspect to consider when studying the history of third and non-binary genders is how our research sources were, or more importantly, were not written. Because many historical documents were written from a Eurocentric perspective by many people merely observing and not experiencing cultural genders, these gendered experiences are written within a binary frame of reference.
Imperialism has inflicted the gender framework of the hegemonic culture, and thus, historical sources written from the perspective of third gender people are significantly rarer.
We've all heard the expression, history is written by the victors, and this is especially true within this topic.
Absolutely. Because of the Eurocentric perspective that led a lot of research, there's a lot of skewed perspectives and looks at gender throughout history, and we lose a lot of the authentic experiences that these different cultures had with gender.
So like starts at Library of Alexandria, then you've got Hitler and all of that too. We've had two large erasures of our history, like intentional destruction of science, philosophy, oral history, thought in general. We have no idea how much we lost there. How many of our stories, like our huge places in like the creation of societies.
That was Biff, considering how history has been, as well as incidentally distorted, such as in the case of the Library of Alexandria, also purposefully distorted as a means of power over marginalized peoples, such as during the Third Reich.
A lot of our research has really highlighted how varied the cultural nature of gender is, from gender assignment to how gender is performed and how it relates to sexuality.
Definitely. For example, records show that the sexuality of two-spirit people was expressed independently of their gender, as they have historically displayed heterosexuality, homosexuality, bisexuality, and asexuality. However, some genders throughout time were assigned or performed in conjunction with a sexual role. We see this in many third genders associated with homosexuality or celibacy.
Yeah, like the Napumsaka of India were mostly believed to be bisexual. Gender assignment also varied throughout time and culture. In our current day Western culture, we first assign gender at birth based on genital configuration, but gender can also be assigned according to spiritual traditions, social roles, and at different points in an individual's life beyond birth.
An example of this is in the Navajo culture, where they have a gender that is recognized in social and ceremonial roles at a young age.
The Mexican gender of the Mushi is also seen as an inherent aspect of a person, which is very different than our postmodernist perspective of gender as a construct.
As you can see, gender can be assigned or constructed from multiple different ways. It's not just based on the genitals or the sex of a person. It can be decided as someone grows and what they start to feel, and it can be much more spiritual than the way we look at it now, which can be more biological. Other examples of gender from a historical context that we were able to discover through our research, we find that in India has a very extensive history of gender outside of man and woman, starting with the Napumsaka. We see that they pop up starting in the 6th century BCE, Early interpretations of this label were translated to "on male," but later we see this interpretation read as neither male nor female, showing more of a binary framework of translation.
And in the Indian religion of Jainism specifically acknowledged a dissonance between biological sex traits and gender as early as the 5th century Common Era, although in this case it was often used as a tool to denounce or stigmatize those of a third gender.
There are also the Mollies of England, who were individuals that participated in gender behaviors that were culturally atypical. And in the 18th and early 19th century, Molly houses were spaces in England where people identified as Mollies would socialize.
Another example is the Femminili, which is a Neapolitan third gender in Italy. And the Femminili were ascribed very specific social, economic, and religious roles in Naples, such as blessing babies or bringing luck to their neighborhood. So that's another instance where we see the religious and spiritual overlap of gender. In fact, in this instance with the Femminili, linguists can actually see how the linguistic features of the term show that it was not used in an adverse way, and the Femminili were socially accepted in Naples. On top of culturally recognized genders in history, we also have individuals and even fictional characters that perform gender in a non-binary manner historically.
Like the Egyptian pharaoh Hatshepsut lived from 1507 to 1458 BCE and used gender manipulation politically in their role of leadership. Research suggests that Hatshepsut's gender identity was not perceived as socially inappropriate or bizarre in Egypt at the time of their rule, nor was it done suddenly or in deception to pass as a man.
We can even use myths and lore to understand how historical societies understood the concept of gender. For example, some religious historians assert that Norse Valkyries are more accurately understood as a third gender outside of medieval men and women. These repeated representations of the Valkyries' divergence from binary gender show the understanding of gender outside the binary in medieval Scandinavia.
So yeah, as you can see, there's instances of gender nonconforming identities all throughout history, all around the world, from folklores and myths to religious texts in the Bugis society of Indonesia. In their culture, there was a tradition of a people known as the Bisu. And the Bisu were gender nonconforming individuals within the communities that also performed certain religious tasks. They were really revered within the community, given special assignments to protect religious regalia. They were there for birth passages and death passages. And we've talked about eunuchs and how eunuchs were typically also high up in societies, and they were aides to nobility because they weren't a threat to the nobility.
I think that's interesting. Like, when we go back to the thing of like when sexualities are related to the gender roles, and like there's a lot of third genders that have been related to celibacy, like the eunuchs. And it's like that creates this tie between religious institutions and celibacy and third genders. And it all kind of overlaps, be a lot of crossover between religious roles and genders. And I think that also really affects how genders outside the binary historically, some of them are accepted and some of them are kind of stigmatized. You know, like we mentioned about in Jainism, like how the hypersexuality of their third gender was used to stigmatize them with Jainism, as opposed to like the Femminili in Naples, where like that was used as a very important role. And I know in Naples, especially, it came down to, or it was probably very heavily influenced by like other historical cultures of it. Like Naples always had this historical culture of being like a very feminine city. Mm-hmm. You know, they have myths of like menstruating cities and like these feminine deities that were also like, you know, they were feminine deities, but they're also non-binary and other like divine duality sort of thing. So it's really interesting too, to see how much that myth and lore and culture and all of these things really impact the lived experiences of these genders and whether they're stigmatized or accepted in their society.
Yeah, definitely. The Bisu I think one of the reasons that they had such an important role within the community is because in their religious text, their creation story had an androgynous deity who basically, the story goes that the deity called upon Bisu, these people who had both male and female spirit, to come and help create the earth. And because the Bisu are included in that, you know, the creation story in their ancient religion of that society, it just kind of helps integrate them into society and gave them a role. It definitely, I think, is interesting to think about how there's cultures who within their religions, there is mention of androgynous identities and these two-spirited identities, where when we think a lot about Christianity and Catholicism, it's very patriarchal, it's very binary. I think it's just very significant that we've discovered that throughout history, there's just been this inclusive aspect of gender nonconforming identities. In ancient Buddhist texts, there is examples of non-normative sexual activity. And within Buddhist texts, there are four identified genders and sexualities. And specifically, one of the identifiers has to do with gender. And that gender identity, they were participating in non-normative gender roles, you know, adopting both masculine and feminine roles. And having those examples within these Buddhist texts is just another example of the way gender nonconforming identities are found throughout history, which I think is so fascinating. And I think through our research, we've been able to really appreciate and feel a lot more affirmed in the fact that these identities exist. They've always existed. You know, now we're able to share that history and help it seem not so radical, not so new, because it's not new. It's not new at all.
Right. Yeah, if anything, it seems like there are far fewer cultures that had this binary.
Absolutely.
You know, and even in cases where the binary may have been the more common or even the norm, it was by no means exclusive. Like, there have always been genders that, even if their roles aren't as socialized as the third genders that have specific societal roles, there's still always either individuals or groups or, yeah, there's always been people, even when the binary is prevalent, there's always been people that don't fit into it. And there's always been a cultural response to that, whether it's been to give them their own gender roles or social roles, or whether it's been to stigmatize them and oppress them, or whether it's been to, you know, accept them. And like, it seems like one of the examples of the genders outside the binary that really had a lot of like independence compared to other social institutions was the one we were talking about, the Navajo one. That gender did not inherently have unexpected sexuality tied to that, or it was more independent of a gender identity compared to that.
I really enjoyed learning about how there are certain First Nations that have ceremonies that would like decide the gender after a baby was born. You know, they would have the midwife perform these rituals on the newborn, and it was still decided after the fact what their gender was. And I just love that, like, there's so much more intention and mindfulness behind it compared to now. You know, you get to go have your ultrasound, find out the sex of your baby, and then you're having a gender reveal party. And it just kind of, like, it's not so magical.
Compared to not such a personal experience, more, yeah.
Yeah, like, you're already deciding this person's
gender.
Well,
and then, you know, and then on top of it, this is a topic for a different episode, but on top of it, then there's like the implications that like sex is even binary, where it's like, just because you see these genitals on a baby, you know what chromosomes they have, you know what secondary sex characteristics, like, gender aside, like, let's not even get into sex. That's a different podcast.
It's like assigning, and even if that person has certain genitals, it doesn't necessarily identify with their sexuality too. So we're just like making boxes within boxes and more boxes. And that's
no more boxes.
No more.
There are no boxes.
Yeah. Like you said, that's a whole other episode. Right. So
All right, that is all from us for today. Thank you for joining us for Non-Binary Gender Scholarship and Experience. And I hope you learned a lot and we really enjoyed learning. And that is us for today. We'll see you on the next episode.
Bye, thanks.